Track 12. This week's feature article is taken from TNF soundings and describes the life of the star Josephine Baker.
TNF soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello again, folks. It's Liz from East Kilbride here. My choice today is Josephine Baker, sometimes called the Black Venus. And you know, I think the word that will apply to her life is ooh-la-la. The French connections will follow. The African-American superstar Josephine Baker was born in St. Louis in the States in 1906. In a very poor family, and she was sent out to work at the age of 8 as a domestic servant. Now, it seems that she was only learning how to clean clothes and clean houses, and very early on she put too much soap in the water for the cleaning of the clothes, and her owner, her woman employer, or whoever we want to call her, the horror would be appropriate, decided that the only way to teach the wee girl how to wash clothes correctly was to put her hand into boiling water and hold it there. Well, you can imagine the pain and the terror and the anger after an episode like that. Josephine decided that her life would be on the stage. So from a very early time, that's the world that she entered. Working backstage, working on chorus lines. Quite often she would be at the edge of the stage, would do the dancing in a comedy manner, and then, to great applause, would take centre stage and do it correctly. There was a star brewing there. She also had time for some early romances, married at the age of 13, and then remarried at the age of 15 to a guy called Baker, as his surname. He didn't stay around long. What stayed around longer was his surname, which Josephine used for the rest of her life. Age 19, she had heard that there was a wonderfully new exciting opportunities available to someone like her in Paris. She sailed over, she took Paris by storm, performing nightly on stage, not only performing what shall we call exotic dances, wearing a very short skirt, strategically placed bananas and very, very long strings of beads, but also, just for an extra bit of drama, she took her pet cheetah on stage with her. He wore a diamond collar and he was called Chiquita. He was generally well tamed. Then sometimes, just to have a finale of sorts, Josephine would release him from his lead. He would jump into the orchestra pit and terrorise the musicians. Now, I think the word dramatic would always apply to Josephine. As well as the drama, she had a great singing voice, she had presence, she took the area by storm and was declared as a wonder of humanity, as a wonder of the stage in Paris. This was the star, this African-American woman who then came back to America in the 1930s and was shocked by the racism that she encountered back there. Because in the eyes of many of the states, especially in the South, she was not a superstar of the French stage. She was just a black woman. Here's what she said. I have walked into the palaces of kings and queens and into the houses of presidents and much more, but I could not walk into a hotel in America and get a cup of coffee. And that made me mad. And when I get mad, you know that I open my big mouth. She knew herself. She also knew she had the money to return to France, and she had the welcome there of a much beloved stage star. Of course, going back to France, come 1938-39 was not exactly a simple decision for Josephine, but she said that her two loves were Paris and also Paris. So she back there, and at the time the war clouds were looming, and she stayed. She stayed in France throughout the Second World War. By that time, she had enough money. She had bought herself a country chateau well away from the city. And in this chateau of many rooms, she rescued and took care of many, many Jewish people or people who had incurred the anger of the Nazi invaders. She used her money to obtain passports, visas, to get them out into safer, neutral countries. And the resistance realised that as a glamorous star, as a woman with almost the immunity of being such a prestigious woman in the cultural life, that she could perhaps play a part in the resistance. And that is what Josephine Baker did. Especially in the early years of the occupation, she decided that her glamour would ensure she was never strip-searched as she moved through different parts of occupied France. So she stuffed letters through the checkpoints by putting them into her bra or the rest of her underwear. And this was something that worked. She decided she could help more. She took letters that had been drafted in invisible ink and then put them inside beside her sheet music. And unknown to the occupying forces, her accompanist and her road manager were actually members of the resistance as well. So she played her part, of course, all very secret at the time. And in fact, was declared to be a collaborator until the truth came out in later years. As the war was moving on, she travelled down to North Africa and was able to entertain the Allied troops, always refused to perform in front of any troops where the American segregation was still in place. And her shows were a triumph. Her charm was so, so powerful. At the end of the war, she decided to return again to the United States. Her convictions about civil rights were becoming stronger and more public. She was welcomed back to Harlem in New York as a superstar. 100,000 people lined the streets. But you know, all that public adoration still didn't protect her from some of the almost casual racism that was still there. She ordered a meal in a very classy joint one night, the Stork Club in Manhattan, and the meal never arrived. Josephine decided this was racism, made a public scene about it, and stormed out of the restaurant. But you know, she wasn't alone in standing up for her rights in the Stork Club. She went out on the arm of a very famous American actress, the later Princess Grace of Monaco. So Josephine was making the statement about racism, and Josephine was once again saying, America, you're not good enough for me. This idea of a future for the world, this idea of people of different groups could live together, led to one of the most, well, we might say bizarre, challenging, indeed odd ideas of Josephine Baker's post-war life. She decided that she was going to show the world that children from different backgrounds could live together. She had suffered several miscarriages, but at this time, immediately post-war, she seemed to have a settled marriage. She had her chateau, she had the money, and she decided to adopt children from different parts of the world. In fact, the eventual size of this adopted family were 12 children. She called them the Rainbow Tribe, And that's when we're now getting into some of the very doubtful ideas. Yes, have them live together. Let's have their different religions shown among the children. Let's respect their different ideas and backgrounds. But does this mean that you should allow visitors to come and observe these adopted children, to pay for tickets to observe the adopted children? Many folk at the time thought Josephine was actually trying to control them, and there are some darker stories and darker elements of her history. I'm glad to say that most of the children as adults remember her with fondness, if not of great love, because of course she was on tour a lot, and it was the money gained from the tours that paid for the nannies who actually raised the children. Into the 1960s, she's again back in America, a very strong supporter of Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement. Famously, in 1963, at the Martin Luther King March on Washington, the woman who did the speech, who introduced Martin Luther King, came on stage. Few recognised her as the Black Venus and the exotic dancer of the Parisian days of the 1920s. Because Josephine Baker very proudly wore the military uniform of the Free French Movement and introduced her friend Martin Luther King, who went on to make the speech about having a dream of the future to be better for America. These years of the 60s and the 70s, she continued to perform. She seemed to gain energy even as her strength was fading from performances, from audiences, and everyone wanted to still adore and celebrate the wonderful, wonderfully charismatic persona of Josephine Baker. She said, "The secret to the fountain of youth is to think youthful thoughts." Well, you know, folks, I think that only takes you so far. But another aspect of her ideas was that she wanted to say thanks to her supporters over the years and declared that, you know, if she was going to pass away, she just wanted to dance all my life. I would like to die breathless at the end of a dance. And, you know, it very nearly happened just like that. She gave a special performance to mark her 50 years in show business, a giant review in Paris in April 1975, financed by Prince Rainier of Monaco, Princess Grace and Jackie Onassis. The opening night audience included Shirley Bassey, who always saw Josephine as a role model, Liza Minnelli, Mick Jagger, Sophia Loren. They were all there. They all declared she was the original superstar. And 4 days later, Josephine Baker was found lying peacefully in her bed. She had passed away, surrounded by the newspapers and the glowing reviews of her performance. She was in a coma, and she passed away in April 1975, aged 68. She was buried with full military honours and adored forever by the people of France. I would like to say that this life has been something that inspired me, but that wouldn't be true, so I can't end on that. I think it has, though, shown me that you can have joy in life at all ages. And perhaps I can leave you with the final words that I think do apply to Josephine Baker, because she really was a humdinger. I'm not intimidated by anyone. And that was the Black Venus, Josephine Baker. Thanks again.
TNF Soundings.